I want to see science serve a useful purpose to improve the standard of living for all people.
Hey, why is anyone fighting food advance? A very small percentage of the world's population is fortunate enough to have the luxury of turning down food.
We've arranged a society based on science and technology. There was nobody who understands anything about science and technology.
You can't build a peaceful world on empty stomachs and human misery.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. It's the weekly biotechnology podcast that's not just about biotechnology, providing information to help you change hearts and minds, moving innovations to application with communication.
Hi, everybody. This is Kevin Fulta with the Talking Biotech Podcast. It's the weekly podcast where we talk about issues in medicine and agriculture with an emphasis on biotechnology and the good things it can do for both people and the planet. So this week, I'm out in Dusseldorf, Germany, at a really important meeting that I've had a great time at. Unfortunately, it's difficult to do those interviews and have a weekly podcast happening. You may have noticed that it's been a little bit disruptive lately and a little more difficult for me to keep up on top of a good steady stream of interviews. It's mostly because, my partner in this, Paul Vincelli, he's been up to his eyeballs, and I've been having some personal changes in life, all good, I think, but nonetheless disruptive. So thank you very much for continuing to listen and continuing to tell your friends about the Talking Biotech Podcast. Lots of great stuff coming up in the future. Today's interview was done by my graduate student, Christopher Barbie. He was recently at the Plant Animal Genome Meeting in San Diego, California, and had the opportunity to sit down and talk to Angela Records. Dr. Records is an expert scientific advisor with USAID. It's a really compelling interview that I really hope you enjoy, and I hope you continue to listen to Talking Biotech Podcast. Everything will be back to normal soon, and I'll be back in the States, and really looking forward to talking to you again. Thank you so much.
With me here at Plant Animal Genome Conference is Dr. Angela Records. Angela is an International Agricultural Research Advisor in the Bureau for Food Security at USAID. That's the U.S. Agency for International Development. Angela just presented a great summary of some of her work in global food security. Chronic hunger affects about 1 billion human beings worldwide. Considering there's about 7 billion of us, that's not good. Could be doing a lot better. Unfortunately, by and large, people are really apathetic, apart from the occasional passive feeling of sympathy, which doesn't really count. But Angela is really doing something about it. Angela has a PhD in plant pathology. She's using that insight in part to organize these big public and private research partnerships internationally to translate basic scientific discovery in plant science into actual stuff people can grow and eat and use. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you.
First off, what is USAID?
So USAID is the U.S. Agency for International Development, and this is the U.S. government's organization to work with developing country partners and help end extreme poverty while promoting resilient democratic societies and also advancing our own security and prosperity.
Yeah, one point that I thought was really amazing about your presentation is that food security can really translate not just into health and economic well-being, but political stabilization and improved democratic and social values in the developing world, as well as like security in the most like traditional sense of the word. Mm-hmm. In doing this kind of work, we can improve the situation of the world, not just for him and her in that country, but also for us as well. So what is it about agricultural growth in particular that can spur economic growth and social advance?
So first of all, you know, hungry people are dissatisfied and are more likely to want change and demand change. data has shown that agriculture is one of the best ways to achieve economic development. So if you can, you know, support smallholder farmers and ensure that they are producing enough food to support their families, and then ideally some to, you know, sell on the side. It's a very basic kind of economy, but it's the kind of economy that spurs, you know, further growth. And so you end up with entrepreneurs who are, for example, growing grains that are then turned into processed food products. And so, for example, one of the programs that I manage is the Food Processing and Post-Harvest Handling Innovation Lab, which is we partner with Purdue University in Indiana, and they work with local partners in Africa to develop highly nutritious food products that local, mostly women entrepreneurs are trained to actually develop these products and then market them to the population. And one advance that they've promoted in recent years is extrusion technology, which is basically the technologies that used to make like Cheetos or dog food or like instant cereals and things like that. They have these small extruders in these training centers where women can learn how to create their own food products that are instant, and then they can market those to their friends and neighbors. So a mother who is concerned about the nutrition for her children, who has the demands of managing a farm or a household or whatever else, can have an instant porridge now that's highly nutritious and easy to make and to feed her family. So it's kind of just a huge win-win. And that's just one example of how, you know, the type of work we do can really kind of make larger change.
Right. So how do you guys affect that? Do you have people and experts on the ground talking to people, or is it through education at their local universities, or?
Yeah, so both. So so basically the program I alluded to was an innovation lab, which is one of our premier investments in the research division in the Bureau for Food Security. So these are U.S. university-led programs. So U.S. university experts partner with experts around the world, and including the countries where we work, and they develop technologies. And so they're doing that in partnership with scientists in the countries where we work. And it involves a lot of capacity building. So there's a lot of training of the next generations of scientists. So graduate students will come from the developing countries and work in the U.S. or vice versa. And then in terms of getting the word out, so, you know, there's a lot of outreach that goes along with this and kind of educating the population. And the example that I gave with the food processing, you know, there are a lot of considerations that go into what kind of products are developed. So it's not just a matter of we're going to try to give you something nutritious. It's a matter of what are the local grains, what is already kind of the staple food that people enjoy, and how can we make that a little more nutritious, and then how can we, you know, make products that are appealing. And so to do that, we have to partner with experts and just regular stakeholders in the countries where we work, so that we can learn from them what is the right sort of mix of tastes and flavors in the country versus, you know, the nutritious pieces that we want to bring into the products. So it's a partnership with local experts. Another aspect of that particular project was taste tests. So what are people willing to pay for something that's a little more nutritious? So they do these sort of blind taste studies where they bring people in and they explain, okay, this particular product is more nutritious for your children, but this one's instant, and this, you know, they're given all these choices, and then they get to determine through a pretty scientific process what are the local people willing to pay for these products. So there's so much thinking that goes into the development of the technologies that we support, and really trying to think of it in a way that makes it sustainable and something that will be taken up by the people.
Yeah, there's a lot of components to that. So how does genomics fit into what you guys are trying to do with global food security and adapting local varieties to do better?
Absolutely. So we support a number of genomics activities, and we're focused on crops that are of importance to the countries where we work. This is ranges from cereals, a lot of sort of traditional approaches to breeding more resilient sorghum, for example, which is a drought-resistant crop, wheat, or legumes. We have several biotech activities looking at how can we improve disease resistance in cassava or banana. But basically, it starts with an understanding of the local context. What are the foods that are most suitable and palatable? And then how can we improve those so that they're disease resistant or drought or heat stress resistant? And so those are the kind of investments that we're making in genomics.
You have a lot of really good examples about what the Feed the Future initiative is doing in this area and improving crop genetics and cultural practices. You guys have a partnership with World Coffee Research. Mm. What's going on there? And why are you guys trying to improve coffee?
Yeah, well, this is an exciting project because, first of all, it's a public-private partnership. So for every U.S. taxpayer dollar that goes into this activity, it's matched by the private sector. So the specialty coffee organizations in the U.S., and they contribute funds towards research that supports understanding coffee genomics, improved management practices, and, better supporting the farmers in the case of the project I was describing in Central America, but we have similar work throughout Africa and Asia as well. And this is about, ensuring resilience of the coffee crop, which is, there are sort of two kinds of coffee. There's Arabica and Robusta, and Arabica is the kind of specialty coffee that we all pay a little bit more for that has the really great flavor. But it's, as the name Robusta suggests, it's robust. Arabica, not as much. And so Arabica needs a little more help. And what we are supporting in this particular project that I described was approaches to help farmers in Central America deal with the effects of coffee rust. So there was a big outbreak of this fungal disease in 2011, 2012. It caused devastating losses in Central America. The farmers are just kind of trying to recover from that. And, it's not what we would traditionally think of as a food security crop, but if you think how important coffee is to the smallholder farmers and the pickers of the berries and the locals in the countries where the crop is grown, it is critically important to their economic future. So we're supporting, we have a partnership with World Coffee Research, which is an organization that brings the private sector funding in and supports these activities. And basically we're developing information for farmers to understand the varieties that are available, resistant they are to disease, their agronomic features, their cupping quality, which is to describe how well the coffee tastes once you grow the plants and roast the beans.
Is that really what it's called?
Cupping quality. And it's you can't even think about just disease or, agronomic features without also taking into account, is this going to taste good at the end of the day? So that's another important feature that we consider. And so there's this information that's being produced, and there's also variety trials. So they've taken coffee from around the world and brought it in and planted it throughout Central America, and they're watching it grow and seeing, how well does it survive in the local conditions, and how well does it resist disease, et cetera. So this is going to be a really useful source of information for growers so that they can understand which kind of varieties they should plant in their plantations.
So USAID organizes a lot through partnerships through industry, mm-hmm. and also through academia. So for academics that are listening, how can they help promote what you guys are doing?
Well, so there's always, there's certainly, and this is kind of the reason we're here at this conference, is the idea is to really bring in the best science to partner with our colleagues in the developing world. And so how do we bring in the most sort of novel, innovative thinking to address these problems? And that's where academia comes in. And so And what we're really encouraging is for those of us, I think like you and myself, who are trained in very molecular, sort of at the bench type of science, is that how can we translate that in a meaningful way that actually has impact in these countries? And so academics have so much to bring to the table, and it's a matter of identifying, you know, what is it that, what are the needs, and how does my research fit into that space? And so I think the best way to approach that is to, you know, if I were to advise an academic here in the U.S. or in Europe, how can you get involved in global development? I think the first step is to attend a scientific conference in a developing country. You know, go in and see what are people doing there. There's a lot of really impressive work going on in these countries. And so finding out, you know, what's going on, what are the gaps, what are the needs, and then identifying logical connections between what you bring to the table and what our partners could bring to the table.
What's something that's going on right now that excites you?
I'm a plant pathologist, so I tend to get excited about diseases, and maybe that's not a good thing because diseases are bad. But
everyone needs a job, though.
Right. There's some job security there. But, you know, I do, I tend to really pay attention to what are the emerging threats in the countries where we work, and even here in the U.S. Like, what is it that, you know, we're always going to be battling disease. That's always going to be around. There will be an arms race between pathogens and hosts forever. And so I think it's important for us to kind of maintain an awareness. One thing that's really in the news right now is the threat of fall armyworm, which is an insect pest that has been in the U.S., but it has now made its way to Africa and is really devastating crops there.
Yeah, I've seen them on YouTube. It's disgusting.
Yeah. So, and that's something we're really kind of scrambling. In fact, our administrator had, you know, a call to action. So we've put together task force with our interagency colleagues. So we're partnering with others in the U.S. government and then, of course, internationally to kind of figure out what's the best way forward to deal with this threat. So I think those kinds of things are exciting because it's like an opportunity to really sort of, for me at least, to really bring my scientific expertise to the table and kind of try to help think through the best response.
That's great. Angela Records, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech podcast. Send your suggestions for guests, comments, or questions to talkingbiotech@gmail.com. Please write a review of this podcast on iTunes and recommend it to a friend. More downloads help us reach a wider audience with science.